Right. My name is Cecilia Davis Vasquez. I'm 25 years old. Today's date is March 9th, 2020. I'm in Las Cruces, New Mexico with Bob, who I'm going to ask a few questions to.
Okay. My name is Bob Kell. My age is 64. Today's date is March 9th, 2020. Location, Las Cruces, New Mexico. My interview partner is Cecile.
All right. So I just learned about you that you are from New York. Can you tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up there or what part of the state you're from?
Well, I was born in a little town called Glen Cove. I was born in a little town called Glen Cove, and when I was about five, my parents moved from there out to New Mexico, to Las Cruces. They were part of the big buildup for the NASA program.
Really? What kind of jobs did they have with that?
Well, my mother was a stay-at-home wife, but my father, he was quality assurance for the lunar excursion module.
Wow.
The part that actually landed on the moon.
That's so cool. Did you ever get to visit him at work?
No.
Top secret, right?
But I still have a notebook full of stuff that he brought me home.
What kind of stuff did he bring you?
Just different, not tech manuals, but line drawings of what the systems look like.
Wow.
And samples of the Mylar, stickers with Snoopy, the eyes aren't the stars.
That's very funny. So you moved here when you were five. What was it like for you being in a completely different, like, world out here?
It was different. I got my butt kicked a lot. Oh. I was the smallest kid in my class most of the time I was growing up. So
me too.
I had a tendency to get picked on.
Tell me about, let's see. So why did you join the Navy?
Why did I join the Navy?
Yeah.
I joined the Navy at my father's behest. I had researched different branches. You know, went to the Army first. They said, yeah, you can fly Hueys. And I was going to go fly Hueys, and then they canceled out that program. And my next choice was the Navy. And my father said, fine, we'll get you in the Navy. So he signed the papers for me to go in the Navy. I was 17 years old.
So you, before you were 18,
mm-hmm.
Gotta get your parents' signature. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about your first few days in the Navy?
The first few days were traumatic. We had company commander. His name was QMC Schnauzer, and he was sadistic. He would make you hold your rifle out with both hands and just see how long you could hold it up. And everybody was like this after about 15 seconds.
I know, I wouldn't last very long at all. Actually, I had a couple. Do you have any siblings?
No.
All right, so you're an only kid. Do you remember what it was like for your mom and your dad when you left for the Navy?
My father was probably happy that I left. Me and my father were always kind of hitting our heads together.
I get that for sure. So where did you serve when you were in the Navy?
My first tour of duty was, my first duty station was USS D'Amato, DDH-71.
What do you remember about that first tour of duty?
We spent a lot of time cruising up and down the east coast of the United States. We would go from Newport, Rhode Island, which was our home port. We would go from Newport, Rhode Island to Norfolk, and we'd hang out in Norfolk for a while. And then we would go to Jacksonville. We'd hang out in Jacksonville for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And we can come back up, hang them back up in Norfolk for a while. And then we can go back up to the home port. So even though we spent very little time in our home port, we didn't spend all that much time outside of the United States.
I see. So when you say we, did you have like a group of friends that you used to hang out with?
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about them?
I hung out mostly with the guys from engineering, since I was an engineer. I got aboard the ship as an undesignated seaman, and they took me up to see the chief engineer, and the chief engineer said, "What would you like to do?" And I said, "Well, I'd like to be a hull technician." And he says, "No, we have too many hull technicians. What else would you like to be?" And I said, "Well, I'd like to be a machinist mate." He says, "No, we have too many machinist mates. How would you like to be a BT?" I said, "What's a BT?" And he proceeded to show me. And that's what I became, and that's what I stayed throughout my career.
Can you tell me what that means, though? What's a BT?
I was a boiler technician.
Okay. What was it like working with the boilers?
Hot.
I can only imagine. What was the kind of work that you did, though?
Anything and everything, from maintaining the boilers to steaming them to cleaning them to maintaining the ancillary machinery. It was very involved,
mm-hmm.
taking care of everything.
Yeah. Tell me about what you did for fun when you weren't working and you were on your tours of duty. What did you do for fun? You're laughing at me already. You have some stories to tell.
Well, we spent a lot of time partying when we weren't working. Or steaming the plant, then they would give us liberty, and we would go ashore, and we would do a lot of partying.
What did that look like?
Drinking, some drugs, but mostly drinking.
All right. All right. So what did you do? Did you have any other tours of duty?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me what the second one was.
The second one was at Helicopter Anti-Submarine Squadron Light 32.
What'd you do there?
At first, they put me in charge of the First Lieutenant Division, but I really hated being in First Lieutenant Division. I told them if I wanted to shine floors all day, I would have stayed at sea. And this old warrant officer came up to me, and he said, "How would, you know, I understand you don't like running First Lieutenant." And I said, "I don't." And he said, "Why not?" And I explained it to him. You know, I just couldn't see being a janitor for 2 years. And he said, "Well, how would you like to run a line division?" And I said, "What's a line division?" And he explained it to me. And I went out there, and I never looked back after that. I ended up running both the line division and first lieutenant.
What's the other one?
Line division. You take care of the birds. You take them out. You move them. You spot them for takeoff. You fuel them. You wash them. You inspect them. It's a never-ending story.
What did you have a third one? Did you have a third tour of duty?
Mm-hmm.
All right. What about that one?
My third tour of duty was aboard the USS Simon Lake, AS-33. She was a subtender.
What does that mean? What is a subtender?
A subtender takes care of submarines. Whenever submarines pull in with a repair that they can't do, they give it to the tender, and then the tender takes care of it.
And what'd you do on that?
I was a boiler tech.
Okay. All right.
And the first 6 months I was there, we spent steaming. So it was six on, six off, six on, six off for the first 6 months.
Wow.
It was 6 hours on, 6 hours off.
Wow. So when you were on these ships, how long would you be on there at a time? You said 6 months?
No. On the ships, it was a five-year rotation. It's 5 years on a ship, 2 years ashore.
Wow. So where else did you serve?
From Simon Lake, I went to Pensacola, Florida.
All right. I wanted to ask you, I just saw this question. I wanted to ask, what was it like for you adapting to, like, the regimentation of military life?
It was different. It was relatively easy because I grew up in a very strict household. And so adapting to the various trials and tribulations of the military was not all that hard.
What about when you left? What was it like adapting back to civilian life?
I'm still dealing with it.
Yeah.
I've been out 23 years now, mm-hmm. and I'm still dealing with it to a certain degree.
Can you tell me about, I heard you telling Luigi a story about driving a bus across the country?
Yeah, when I was little, my parents came across country in a Volkswagen bus.
Was that to New Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
That was the drive in the bus?
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that drive?
Not a whole lot.
You were yet little, mm-hmm. five. So did you ever get caught breaking any rules when you were in the Navy?
Yes. on my first ship, we had what was known as a captain's call, where the crew gets together with the captain. That afternoon during the captain's call, the captain said, well, I'm not going to address the drug problem because I really don't think we have a drug problem. And somebody said from the back of the crowd, no, we don't have a drug problem. We can get them wherever we want them. So
was that true?
Yeah. Yeah, we could.
How did you do that?
Just different shipmates.
All right.
That had access,
mm-hmm.
would
do the deed.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What about, what else? What other pranks? Did you do any pranks with your friends?
No, not really. It was pretty straightforward.
Got it. So how old were you when you left?
The Navy?
Yeah.
Oh, I was 40-something. I forget exactly.
What made you decide to leave at that point?
I was burnt out.
Hmm. I see. Yeah. Let's see. I just had a question I wanted to ask you, but I forgot. Oh, I wanted to ask you why you came in today. Is there any stories that you wanted to share in particular?
I came in because my counselor suggested that I come in here. I didn't have any particular stories that stood out that I wanted to share.
Mm-hmm.
But she thought it would be a good idea because she said I have a bunch of good ones.
Do you think she had any in mind for us?
Well, when I was in a helicopter squadron, were sending a fast reaction jet to sea, and they asked me if I wanted to go with them, and I said, sure. And they said, bring summer weight clothing because we're going down to the underwater test and evaluation range down in Puerto Rico. And we said, okay. So we all packed summer weight clothes. We flew into Charleston, got aboard the ship, got underway, hung a left and headed north. Now you have to remember this was November. And we headed north and we spent November and part of December about 500 miles off the coast of Newfoundland paying tag with a Russian submarine.
Tell me more about that. What was like the day-to-day dealing with that like?
It was cold.
Yeah.
And it was rough. The ship would be rocking from side to side, and it would also be rocking from stem to stern. And we'd go into a wave, and the screws would come out of the water, and you could hear the screws start to speed up. And then when the ship's stern would settle back into the water, this whole ship would shake itself like a wet dog. And it was so unbelievably nasty down a compartment from people being seasick and all the rest of this, that some of us decided we were going to sleep in the hangar. And we had cots, regular military U.S. Navy 1H cots. And we put them over the rails in the hangar so you'd be sleeping and the ship would roll and the cot would slide, ka-tung. And it would roll back the other way, and the cot would slide, ka-dunk.
That sounds insane.
But we brought the Hilo in one day. We landed the Hilo.
What's that?
The helicopter.
Got it.
And we landed it, and we went to bring it inside, and the ship changed course. Instead of being into the wind, they changed course about 90 degrees, and everything went wild. And we managed to get chains on the rear of the helicopter, but the front didn't have them, so it was just sliding back and forth in the hangar. Wham! Oh, wow. And you got to figure this thing is 12 tons of metal and fiberglass sliding back and forth. And, I mean, people were literally climbing up the sides of ladders trying to get out of the way.
That sounds so scary.
But we finally got it tied down, and there wasn't any real major damage to it, but that we noticed at the time. We were flying again a few days later, and we brought the Hilo in. You know, I was what was known as a landing signals enlisted, which was unusual for somebody who was a BT-2 at the time, boilers technician second class. And I was the LSE. I was bringing the aircraft in. I was guiding it in. And I gave them the signal to land, and they landed. And one of the landing gear broke. It just went and it was like the world stopped for a few seconds. And then all of a sudden we got back to chaining it down and shutting it down. And when it got all shut down and everything, I realized that if I'd have been standing about 3 feet further forward, one of the blades would have taken the top of my head off.
Close call.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other close call stories like that?
Yeah. From Pensacola, which was pretty much just straight shore duty, I went to the USS Seattle, AOE 3, and we went out. I called the ship. Let me back up a second. I found out on a Friday that I was going to the ship. And I called them, and I said, when are we getting underway? And they said, Tuesday morning. And I said, fine, you'll see me Tuesday morning at O-Dark 30. And I went down to the ship with my wife. She saw me up the gangplank, you know. And we got underway. And we proceeded to set the Lant fleet record for the number of ships refueled and rearmed during a deployment. That's what we did, was beans, bombs, and black oil. We carried it. We also were the only ships that were configured to keep up with the aircraft carrier. We could do 30-plus knots just like the aircraft carrier could. We were steaming along one night. We were off the coast of Libya, and the officer of the deck calls me up, and he says, how fast can we go? And I said, well, it is configuration 22 knots. Why? And he says, well, what if something's chasing us? And I said, well, you ring it up and I'll try to answer it. And we were only doing about 15 knots at the time. So all of a sudden, the engine order telegraph, the thing that you see in the movies that shows the ship how fast to go, they rang it up to flank. And we were like, oh, my God, how are we going to answer this? So I told the boiler technicians of the watch to take their boilers into manual control and just bring them down as far as we possibly could and still keep steaming. And we completely maxed out the equipment, and we were doing 26 and a half knots through the water screaming for help. And what was off our side was one of Mr. Gaddafi's submarines in a perfect position to fire. Why nobody fought, why he didn't fire, nobody will ever know, because they're on the bottom of the Bay of Sidra. Because the combat air patrol from Saratoga came over and sank them.
Wow. That's a story. So what do you feel like you learned about yourself when you were in the Navy?
I learned a lot about myself. One thing, that I was an alcoholic. Learned that. Learned that I had a fairly high tolerance for stress.
Absolutely.
I was good with stress. I was also a lot more moral than I ever thought I was.
Did you learn, so did you, you said you were off the coast of Libya. Did you, what were some of the places that you were able to visit in your time during your service in the Navy?
Haifa, Israel was one that was memorable.
What do you remember about that?
Going down to see Masada, the place where the zealot Christians held out against the Romans for over a year until the Romans built a ramp up the side of the mountain. I mean, this is a significant engineering feat. And we got to go up the mountain and look down, and you could still see the old Roman encampments. They still had the building, the encampment where the Christians held out. Herod had a palace on one end of it. You know, it was a really fascinating place. That's where the Israeli military takes their cadets to, swear them in.
Mm. What are some other places that you got to visit?
We visited Italy a lot.
Did you go there with your wife? Did you take your wife on any of these travels with you?
No.
Okay. But what do you remember about Italy?
Italy was kind of yucky until you got away from the piers, until you got away from Fleet Landing. You had all at down at Fleet Landing, you had all the Hey Joes and the guys selling different posters and the guys selling all the different pornographic materials and you name it. Mm-hmm. It was just a nasty place to be. And then you get away from there, and it was actually quite nice. You could actually see some history.
Did you ever eat spaghetti in Italy?
Yeah, I ate pizza too.
Did you love it?
Yeah, it was good.
Good. So, let's see. Is there anything that you wish civilians understood about military service, or yours in particular?
Say that again.
Do you have anything that you wish civilians knew about serving in the military?
I wish they understood the discipline. Most civilians I've known are a pretty undisciplined lot.
Is there anything else you want to share with me?
Well, one night we were steaming along on the Seattle, and a water main broke, and it showered water all over the ventilation controllers for the forward engine room. And the ventilation controllers went down, and it immediately got really, really hot. So they had to secure the plant. Well, when they secured the plant, they didn't secure it all the way. They still had a few things that were still needed to be done. And we were standing around topside discussing this whole thing. And the MPA is up there, and he says, "It's too hot down there." He says, "I can't go down there." And the main propulsion assistant is what the MPA is. He's responsible directly to the chief engineer for everything that goes on in the main spaces. And I had the after engine room, fire room, and I said, "The heck with it." I said, "I'll go down there." So me and another kid went down there, and we ended up securing the plant the rest of the way. Just me and one guy. That was kind of hard. And we came out of there. We were both holding on to each other, kind of pushing ourselves up the ladders to get out. It was so hot down there that the plastic covers on the lights melted. The heat stress thermometers that were down there and that went up to 120 degrees actually popped the tops off the heat stress thermometers. It was quite warm.
Yeah, maybe a little more than quite warm. Tell me another story like that where you had to go in and do something really hard and you made it through.
We were in Norfolk, Virginia, and we went to a firefighting school. And we were an advanced firefighting team. You know, we had been together for a while, and we had gone through the various different schools. So we got to use some of the school's people in with our firefighting team. And the man they called the access man, we had to go up this little passageway. It's probably a little bit, about as long as this room. And we went up this passageway, and the access man knocked the clips off the hatch coming through. But nobody realized that the wind was coming opposite where the hatch was. So he knocked the last clip off the hatch. The hatch flew open, and the fire came screaming out at us. And we found out that fire won't go through a low-velocity fog, but it'll certainly go around it. It chased us right back out that passageway. And the guy that was playing on-scene commander, or on-scene leader, as we called him, was screaming at us, "You can't run away from that. Get back up there and put that blankety-blank fire out." So we did. We went right back in there and put it out.
Wow. Wow. Are there any more stories you want to tell me?
Oh.
Or anything you want to say or anything you want to share?
It was a good career, 25 years. I ended up in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii for my Twilight Tour. My Twilight Tour being the last tour of it.
What was that like? What do you remember about being there?
Well, I stationed at a little command on the far side of the harbor called the Magnetic Silencing Facility. And what we did was we took ships and we wrapped them with miles of cable. And the cable was probably about 1.5 inches, 2 inches in diameter. And it weighed 13 pounds a foot. I remember that much. And we had to wrap the ships with this stuff. And they had a control room, and we would fire up the diesel generators, and they would shoot current through these cables to generate magnetic fields to counteract the magnetic fields of the ship. It was a real involved, it was a real intricate process. Yeah. It was fascinating to watch. Hmm.
So I noticed that you have some tattoos on your knuckles. Can you tell me the story behind that?
It says hold fast. Hold fast goes back to ancient sailing days where when you were climbing in the rigging, you used one hand for the ship and one hand for you. Otherwise, you would fall. Hold fast also goes to blacksmithing, which is a piece of equipment that they use for holding a piece of steel hard and fast while you're hammering on it. They also use the same kind of thing in woodworking.
Why did you choose to get it on your knuckles?
After I saw Master and Commander of Far Side of the Sea and I saw the old guy with the hold fast on his knuckles, I wanted it.
So I got it. All right. Thank you so much, Bob, for talking with me. Is there anything else you want to share in these last couple minutes?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.